Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Noah Richmond.
And we're going to have a little head start on our end-of-year horror discussion. Our best-of lists are going to be coming from everyone later, before the end of the year. So Noah and I are going to get a little head start on that. But first, we're going to chat a little bit about Darren Lynn Bousman's latest film, Abattoir, which is in theaters this week. Got to see a sneak peek of it. Tom Levine also watched it, but he can't join us today. But his review will be on the website post-haste, I guess, real soon now. And we can all have a little chat with, well, a little overview about the film. And there's also an interview with the director on the website. We had audio for that, but his side of the audio is so bad, I could not, in good conscience, subject you, fair listener, to that mess. So it's been transcribed for the website for you to read. But the synopsis of Abattoir is: an investigative reporter works to solve the mystery behind a mysterious man who has been buying houses where tragedies have occurred. Set in a world where it always feels like night, even in daylight hours, real estate reporter Julia Talbert's life is turned upside down when her family is brutally murdered. It is believed to be an open and closed case, but Julia quickly realizes there is much more to this story when she returns to the crime scene to find the murder room deconstructed and physically removed from her sister's home. This ignites an investigative pursuit that eventually leads her and ex-lover Detective Declan Grady to the town of New English, where they find the enigmatic Jebediah Crone and the Abattoir, a monstrous house stitched together with unending rooms of death and the damned. Julia comes to realize that her sister's soul is trapped inside, but the Abattoir isn't just a house. It's a door to something more evil than anyone could ever have imagined. Julia and Grady are ultimately faced with the question, how do you build a haunted house one room at a time? I always thought that description was kind of strange because it kind of gives away.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you need a spoiler warning before you read that description, because it pretty much tells you everything right up to about the last scene.
And there was a shorter description of it elsewhere, but I can't find it. And it's like all of the early descriptions of it got replaced by this, hello, we're just going to tell you the whole plot of the movie here.
Yeah. Well, and really, I mean, for me going into it, I was, one of the things that seemed a little intriguing to me is the film started and I'm watching this movie about an investigative reporter and her relationship with this detective, and all of a sudden she's, her family's murdered. All of a sudden she's part of the story. She's no longer the person just looking into it. I didn't expect that. You know, to me that was one of the things I actually thought was good about the movie, and that description just kind of spoils it right there. Now, to be fair, where the film winds up going, you know, that piqued my interest, and really ultimately the film doesn't go anywhere all that interesting. So it's a film that had elements that had me thinking, you know, Darren Lynn Bousman, he's you know, he did Repo, the Genetic Opera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's somebody that could be coming up with something a little different, maybe throw some twists.
And, unconventional.
Yeah, exactly. You know, have some elements in there that might be of interest and might be different. But I found this film, the biggest disappointment for me was how by the numbers it was in a lot of ways.
Okay.
For myself, I saw, you know, the ending was pretty typically what you expect in any modern horror film.
Now, in the interview I did with Darren, I went more into, I guess, the inspiration behind him coming up with the story, and into some of the production design direction choices. And he said he had always wanted to combine a film noir thriller with a haunted house story. He'd been wanting to do that for years, and this gave him the opportunity to explore that. But he was particularly, there were two things that he really, really, really wanted to get as right as possible, through his words. He wanted to have a particular style or design for the ghosts. I mean, they had to have this one particular look. And he wanted the characters to feel like they were from another time, but in a modern thing. His thing was, yeah, I wanted somebody like Bogart and Bacall, but in a modern setting. He said he wanted to get that 40s noir feel without feeling like they were out of place. He described a scene where you had like something that was old juxtaposed with something that was modern, like a typewriter beside a computer, that Julia is using. He wanted even their dialogue to be from a different time period, like the 40s style of way of talking, a way of banter, but they're in a modern setting. He specifically wanted to do that on purpose. Do you think it worked?
No. for one thing, it didn't really, the way that it was shot, to get that 40s film noir look and feel, you really would need something that had a closer look to the look of old film grain. And there was something very cheap looking about this movie, which really surprised me, because he's somebody that does have a track record. And even though his films may be low budget films, I don't remember ever watching them in the past thinking that they had kind of a cheap look about them.
Mm-hmm.
But this really had something that was very close to an almost shot with, you know, a high-end consumer video camera look about it. And so it doesn't, you can see that it's trying to be film noir, but it's really just a step above somebody with a home movie camera saying, hey, let's make a film noir for our friends and family.
So it's more Super 8 or Cloverfield than it is a mix of modern noir.
Super 8 or Cloverfield.
Well, in terms of shooting style, or I mean just film look style.
Uh-huh.
Not really.
Yeah, I don't know if I would really quite compare it to that. No, I mean, it's definitely not like a Cloverfield shot on camera look. But I just mean that somehow the production values don't really seem quite as strong as what I remember Repo the Genetic Opera being. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I saw that in a theater with a packed audience that was all singing along with it and very excited, so I may have overlooked if that one had any kind of similar lack of quality.
Mm-hmm.
And also, honestly, the idea of a film noir mixed with a haunted house film, no, this was really pretty jarring. You thought you were watching a film noir, and then suddenly it turns into a haunted house film. But it doesn't really blend together that well, and it's overly long. It sort of, it feels like it really stretches itself out, and it could have been a lot. Seems like it could have been a lot tighter and a lot more to the point.
So I think if it was a little bit shorter, it might have been more effective at presenting the style and the scares.
No, it would have been somewhat less dull, but no, I mean, you know, as I say, I'm, you know, here it sounds like I'm really ripping on it, and it's just that the film had intriguing things that were leading me along, but they all led up to something pretty predictable. So that was issue number one, and then add in that it was stretched out for, you know, probably like a half hour longer than it needed to be. So it was, it, you know, it was not the worst thing that I've sat through, it, you know, probably even this year, but it was not a particularly satisfying viewing experience.
So it's for you, it's more that the novelty and or unconventional setups didn't pay off to your expectations that those had actually put in place.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like maybe he was, again, just because of the little bit of background that I know with the director, I thought he might be dropping some breadcrumbs to pull me along and then do something that I wasn't seeing coming. You know, why are these murder rooms being collected, and what is this woman's connection with this new English place? It reminded me quite a bit of H.P. Lovecraft's story Shadows over Innsmouth, mm-hmm. where you have this person going in, you know, this outsider coming to this town and encountering all this weird stuff. And I guess spoiler here, only to find out that he in fact is actually part of it and never realized it. So it had that similar quality about it. But then it didn't really do anything interesting with it.
Oh, well, I guess sometimes you're going to get that. You're going to get an ambitious movie that for time reasons or budget reasons doesn't quite live up to the promise of any particular vision or the promise that a script should. So, but
yeah,
for...
I think that's fair. I think that what he was trying to do was much better than how it actually turned out.
So officially, for the record, what would you give this on the 5-star scale rating?
I'd probably give it about a 2.
So watchable, but yeah, lowered expectations, but watchable.
Right. I've sat through worse, but it, it, you know, I wouldn't recommend it.
Gotcha.
It was kind of neat to see the Jebediah Crone, the actor Dayton Cali, seeing that actor from Sons of Anarchy doing doing something different, doing a role like that was fun. I sort of enjoyed seeing the Lin Shaye character as well. Again, though, the way it was shot, it really wasn't that great, but it was just sort of fun to see her doing another batty old woman role.
Cool. Well, since we are coming up on the end of 2016, and there have, in my estimation, been a lot more horror movies released this year than sci-fi movies, especially in the independent and near independent, like the middle of the road.
Well, that's
studios that's... and low budget and middle, in, you know, indie budget, low budget. There have been a lot more horror movies than sci-fi movies this year.
Well, that's every year, isn't it?
It seemed to be more so this year. Like last year, we had movies like Time Lapse and Debug and Nightmare Code. And this year, I can't. I'm like off the top of my head, I can't think of an indie sci-fi feature. I'd have to go back and look, but there's like five or six horror movies that jump out. I'm like, what happened? I mean, what was another Paradox? Was that this year or last year?
I'm not familiar with that one, so I can't say.
Paradox is actually on Netflix right now. It stars Malik Yoba and, oh, what's her name? She's a stunt woman turned action actress. Zoe Bell.
Okay. Well, I guess as far as if I'm going to say what I, you know, go back and look at what I saw this year in horror, certainly the biggest pleasant surprise for me was Ouija Origin of Evil. Not because it was like, you know, the greatest horror film, but it was actually, you know, pretty good. It actually had some pretty decent scares, and it didn't have any right to be even pretty good because it was a horror film sequel to a movie that is not, you know, that's widely considered to be a terrible horror film, which was Ouija. I don't think this to me just blew my mind. I really was kind of hesitant to. One of the things they smartly did is they didn't actually market it as being, well, I guess in this case it's a prequel, but they didn't market that it was a prequel to this other film. So I actually went to the screening because I thought, oh, well, this is just another Ouija board movie. If I'd realized it was related to the other film, I might not have even wanted to go to the screening. And certainly once I found out they were related, I really had extremely lowered expectations. So, you know, that one actually turned out to be, you know, reasonably good. And then Don't Breathe, I guess, I don't know, how do you define horror? Because usually when I say horror, I just immediately assume monsters and supernatural, and other people, when they say horror, they really mean horror. They mean, you know, bloody murder, violence, whatever. Don't Breathe is more of like a suspense film. So, again, all depending how you define horror. But that was one I thought was very solid. I remember in my reviews, I gave Don't Breathe 4 stars. I gave Ouija Origin of Evil 3.5, but both of them were experiences I was pretty pleased with. Another film I gave 4 stars to was the Korean movie Train to Busan, which is it's a straight up zombie film. It's nothing groundbreaking, but it's just a very well done one, and it's a pretty good claustrophobic environment. Zombies on a train. I don't know if it would work as well. I know there's been talk of an American remake, and I don't know quite how that works, as we don't have bullet trains here. You know, part of what makes the film what it is because you're on a Korean bullet train. But it really does capture this closed-in environment where you're trying to get from car to car with these ravenous zombies. But so Train to Busan was pretty fun. So in terms of what I saw, those were the 3 standouts. And then there was Conjuring 2. And that one, you know, I do have to say Conjuring 2, I will give that the scares that are effective in it are some of the more effective scares I've seen in any horror film. But it really was dumb. Particularly just the final scene was just so overblown. It was so overdone. I don't understand why more people aren't bothered by. You know, horror is one of those things that it just isn't scary if you know a Hollywood production throws too much money at it and puts too many effects in. Conjuring 2 really made that classic mistake of just showing too much and going overboard with its premise to where it actually becomes silly. So that was a really mixed bag for me, but overall, I mean, it'd be worth catching on Netflix if you want to see something that will give you, will give you the creeps, but at times, but it's also the end of it is almost laughable. And then there was The Witch, which was one of the most unique, one of the most interesting films that I've ever seen. A horror film set in a time period where they really don't seem to have a lot of films set in the early colonial days just before the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the Puritan world, taking you into the world of the New England Puritans and just the overwhelming paranoia, a sense of constant fear of the devil and being drawn into temptation and this horrendously sinful world where you just make the slightest wrong step and your soul is just sucked away and damned to hell forever. So The Witch was very interesting. But again, it was also just icky. It's a film I walked away from feeling like, well, that was really interesting, but it also just kind of made me feel sick. And I'm not sure in the end that the interesting parts that I got out of it were really worth just feeling sick. Like, it wasn't a particularly scary horror film or some really like remarkable piece of storytelling. So that one was kind of the one I was most mixed on this year, because the things I found fascinating about it were so fascinating, but it seemed like you could have told like a fun and interesting horror film with it, and instead of just purely making something to just disturb people. or if it was scary, but it wasn't. And I don't know that it was even trying to be.
Interesting.
And then there was The Neon Demon.
Was that really horror?
Yeah, that's another one where, do we call it horror? It wasn't horror from when I was saying Don't Breathe. Is that horror? You know, if Don't Breathe is horror, then Neon Demon is horror.
Okay.
It's definitely horror in the sense of shock value and gore and cannibalism. It's not horror in the sense of, any kind of witches or vampires or demons.
Okay.
Which is ironic because it is The Neon Demon. But certainly one of the most gorgeously filmed movies that you're ever going to see. I mean, the guy's got an incredible aesthetic value. He can take a very low budget and come up with something that just is unbelievable to look at, and the color palettes and the sound, but it's missing the story. And it's another one that just seems like it kind of at a certain point decides it just wants to be shocking and disturbing for the sake of shocking you and disturbing you, and
mm-hmm.
not... I just don't, you know, for me, I want to either have fun with my horror films or I want them to really scare me. And I don't really get why there are so many of these films out there that are just purely made to make you feel sick and make you feel bad.
Well,
another very good example of that being The Eyes of My Mother.
Mm-hmm.
That was another one that I caught. It was at the Phoenix Film Festival, and it's a black and white film. It was one I was interested in, a lot of times I tend to be skeptical of independent horror for the exact reason that I just said, that by and large, they tend to think of being disturbing as just a goal into and of itself. And you don't have a lot of films that are really genuinely scary or even really trying to be genuinely scary. And you don't have a lot of films that are just kind of having some good old fashioned fun
mm-hmm.
with, either good old fashioned fun in the sense of Evil Dead or Reanimator that are completely gore fests, but, you know, relishing in being completely over the top gore fests, or films that are having fun in the classical sense of Dracula or Frankenstein or, you know, some old noir kind of monster film. But I was interested in this one because I caught a little clip of an interview with the director saying Eyes of My Mother, he was trying to go for the old classic horror film look and feel. So that sounded like it could be something right up my alley. And it just turned out to be precisely what I feared it was going to be, which is, you know, just the girl has all these terrible things happen to her when this maniac comes and kills her family members. And so then she ties him up and keeps him alive in this decrepit state for years. And she grows up completely screwed up about the world and goes around, starts killing people herself as her own way of working through her detached clinical experience growing up. So it's another one. I actually, it's one at a certain point I just got up and left because I just didn't feel like watching yet another torture scene.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't understand the accolades that some people are heaping on it.
Interesting.
And then another one that I was really excited about and just completely befuddled by what people are seeing in it is The Wailing, which was another Korean horror film that came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Across the board rave reviews. And that I just didn't find scary and I didn't find fun. It just was another long, slow film that was just made to make you feel disturbed.
Before I get into my appreciation and definition of horror and the movies that I saw this year that stood out to me, wasn't Green Room on the top of one of your lists too?
Yes. I gave Green Room. That's one I gave an actual 5-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Green Room.
Yeah, because I don't think I've heard anything bad about that movie. Everyone has said if you want to see Patrick Stewart stretch beyond the captain and you can't afford to see him on stage in England, this will erase Captain Jean-Luc Picard from your mind pretty quick.
Right. And again, this is another one where, I don't know, we're calling it a horror film, I guess, but it's a suspense film. It's a Hitchcock movie, basically.
Yeah.
But bloodier.
And that gets into my definitions of horror. I think the tense, suspenseful thriller where you have a protagonist or a group of protagonists whose lives are in mortal danger from a human sociopath or psychopath or groups of sociopaths or psychopaths, that counts as horror to me because you have your lead characters are supposed to be the emotional connection for you, the viewer. When they are in peril, you are concerned for them. When they are in emotional jeopardy, you feel what they're feeling. When they're in physical danger, when they could die at any moment, that, to me, if that is the entire through thread of the film, I would say that a lot of suspense movies then do cross into a type of psychological horror. I prefer psychological horror to the senseless blood fests, you know, torture porn. The Saw movies don't do anything for me. I had no interest in seeing those. You know, Hostel, all those other ones that came after it, copycatting. I'm like, this isn't horror to me. This is just a bunch of three-year-olds playing in fake blood, seeing who can get the most blood up on the wall. That's not horror to me. Horror is the stuff that keeps you up in the middle of the night going, A, I can't stop reading this book. B, I don't want to turn out the light, so I might as well keep reading this book.
Right.
Yeah. And so I guess I'm a little pickier about what I call horror. And I haven't seen Green Room yet, but it's on the top of my list. Is hopefully I'll get to Netflix soon, please. Same thing with Train to Busan. I want to see that movie.
Actually, Green Room is on Amazon Prime. That's who managed to snag that one.
Ah, okay. That's why it hasn't shown up on Netflix yet.
Right.
But yeah, for me, those types of... I love monster movies. Don't get me wrong. I love a good monster movie. But when there's no supernatural element and it's people against people, if it's just about splashing blood, cutting off limbs, watching blood spurt, that's not scary to me. That's just, after a while, when you get old enough, it's just boring.
Right.
So give me a good monster movie and give me a good psychological horror where it's not torture based or blood spatter based. That's how I look at it. I know that there's a lot of good horror in written fiction. I think they call it like extreme horror or gonzo horror, whatever it is. I can appreciate the attraction to that. It's just not my kind of story. However, like I said, give me a good monster movie and I'm a little kid again. You know, I'm sitting on the sofa going, oh, the monster, you know, because I grew up on the Universal monster movies, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, all of those.
Yeah.
Creature from the Black Lagoon, all of those movies. I grew up on those. And then all the original Godzilla movies.
Yep. Yep, I was going to say that. Pumpkinhead was a good one, I thought, the original Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, the first one actually was. Yeah, it was. So, like, give me a good monster movie. That's what I like. So going into 2016's horror offerings, the best movie I saw that was marketed as a horror, but really was not a horror movie at all. It was just a suspenseful Western called Outlaws and Angels. It was dark. It was very languid. It had a deliberate slow pace to it. And for people who are fans of Westerns, the best way I can describe it is you take the way that the movie Once Upon a Time in the West was filmed. It's just a very deliberate, slow pacing to that. And that tension, it actually adds to the dread. And there is a lot of dread in this movie. The acts of violence are filmed slow motion. They're not over the top, but they're just emphasized. And when I say everybody in the movie who dies more than had it coming to them, I'm not kidding. And they meet their ends in brutal, direct ways. And they deserved it. Every last bit of it, they deserved it. And it literally was one of the best movies I saw this year, but I would not classify it as horror, but it got marketed as horror.
Really?
Yeah, it got marketed as horror. And I ended up interviewing the director, because he wrote and directed it. His name is J.T. Molnar. And for those of you who are wondering, Summer, we didn't hear that interview. That's right, you didn't. Not really. That interview is over on writersafterdark.com. But people who are Patreon supporters got to hear the audio of it. But that was one of the most fulfilling film experiences that I had all year. Now, going into straight horror movies, Pandemic came out in the spring. And I'm not sure. The best way I can explain that is because that stars Rachel Nichols from Continuum. A zombie apocalypse story, but it's filmed from a first-person point of view. Mm-hmm. Most of the shots are filmed from a person's viewpoint. Like I said, it's got Rachel Nichols, it's got Mekhi Phifer. Oh, what's her name? Missy Pyle, that's it. Missy Pyle and Alfie Allen. Everybody who knows him from Game of Thrones. Uh-huh. Now, this movie, I think, right now is on Netflix. I enjoyed it because it told a zombie apocalypse survival story from a different point of view perspective. The twist in the movie made me, I kind of predicted part of what would happen. But the twist in the movie actually made me angry at the protagonist. And just going into spoilers, if you knew you were one of the few surviving humans on the planet, maybe in the country, maybe in the world, would you knowingly endanger several hundred survivors, uninfected people, just to save one who might be beyond help? Is that, no matter how much you love that person, would you risk the survival of humanity to do that? That just seemed like ultimately unbelievably selfish to me. And it made me angry. That's all.
Right.
But It's actually a pretty good movie. The way they shot it was amazing. That's just my personal viewpoint. I honestly could not connect her actions with what she saw going on in the world around her. I really, truly couldn't. But the rest of the movie, I mean, the production design and everything was just really, really cool. Another one that I saw was, I'm not really sure I should go into that one because I didn't like it much. Well, Curse of Sleeping Beauty. It had an interesting premise. The twist in it, I really did not see coming. And I have to give them props for that. However, I think it's like what you said with Abattoir. It was too slow and too long to be fully enjoyed, you know?
Okay.
Another one that came out, in fact, Tom and I talked about it, I think back in October, maybe early November, The Similars. That is a very, very atmospheric film. It's set in a rural bus station in 1968 Mexico. And you hear these snippets of what's going on in the outside world through like a radio broadcast of news. And it literally is like the entire world is going to hell. And Nobody can figure out what's going on. It sets up the paranoia beautifully. The isolation is incredible. And it benefits from having one set. Everything happens in this bus station until the very end when you're driving out on the railroad. And you don't see what's coming. And it reminds you of one of the old good Twilight Zone episodes where you're just riveted. You have no idea what's going on, but you want to keep watching and find out what the hell is this. And it's beautifully shot. It's almost black and white, and I say almost because the colors are faded. I mean, it's not color, but it's not black and white. It's somewhere in between. And it gives you that's what I think helps give you that old-timey Twilight Zone feel.
Uh-huh.
And you should really check it out if you get a chance. The other one that immediately comes to mind technically came out in 2015, but didn't hit home video until Halloween of this year. It was the anthology, Tales of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That was a lot of fun. Out of all, there was 10 short stories, short films set in, all of the stories set in this one particular town on one crazy Halloween. So all of these stories happen in the same town on the same night of this just unbelievably bizarre Halloween in this one town. And all 10 short films are beautifully shot. I think two of them I thought were kind of boring.
Uh-huh.
But three or four of them were outstanding. Outstanding. There was one called, was it Friday the 31st or something like that? It was all stop motion animation, and it gave you the masked serial killer with the machete, the damsel in distress, the reanimated corpses, and visiting extraterrestrials. Yeah. And Halloween candy. And it's ridiculous and it's hilarious. I think that was the one that was directed by the same guy who did Big Ass Spider. So he takes his camp very seriously. Mike Mendez, he takes his camp very seriously. I think that's the one he did. But there are some in there that are just amazing. You have to check that one out. Like I said, it didn't come out on home video until, I guess, like a month ago, or 2 months ago in October. So that's why I'm including it for this year, because you couldn't get it until now. Those are the ones that stand out in my mind. There was one other movie recently called The Monster, which was a mother-daughter. It's more a mother-daughter relationship story than it was a monster movie, but it was a monster movie. And I'm still trying to decide, even though I saw that movie a month ago, I'm still trying to decide how I really feel about it. Because as a horror movie, as a monster movie, it kind of works. I'm still trying to figure out whether I really liked it. Now, I've watched it twice, so that must mean something. It really is interesting because it's very atmospheric. It's shot at night on a deserted road in the middle of nowhere. Mother and daughter, they're traveling. She's taking her daughter back to her father. Because she can't handle life with the girl, I guess. Or the girl's angry at her. And it's more about how their relationship, I guess, comes comes to a new level of understanding than it is about how they survive this creature that they come across after their car breaks down in the middle of nowhere. And I guess that's the part that I'm, now that I'm thinking about it, I guess that's the part that I'm conflicted about, is the monster is introduced more to get them to deal with each other than it is to be something that's truly overcome. Because the monster manages to, let's just say, wreak a lot of havoc. But it's interestingly done. It is interestingly done. And the flashbacks actually work to show how their relationship got broken in the first place. I guess I'm just not really sure how entirely I feel about it, but it's a, for being filmed mostly at night in the rain, it actually builds up atmosphere quite well.
You know, you are reminding me of there something else I did catch at the Phoenix Film Festival. I caught a film called Antibirth, which stars Chloe Sevigny and Natasha Lyon, the, you know, the girl from Orange is the New Black. That was, it was an, I mean, it was another film that just doesn't hold together in any respect in terms of any kind of narrative storytelling. It is a film that I do wonder how appealing it might be to somebody who saw it in, you know, under the influence of a lot of psychedelics. You know, maybe it takes on a whole new meaning. But that was another thing that I saw this year that got classified as a horror film. Which, again, I think I'm only just remembering it now because to me it was pretty forgettable. But I do remember walking out of it thinking, well, you know, maybe somebody who was in the correctly altered state of mind might get something out of that that I didn't.
Yeah, and like I said, there are a lot of movies coming out, and I think I've seen two this year that were classified as horror, and I'm like, this to me is not horror. It's not. You know, Outlaws and Angels being one of them. I'm like, this is just a Western with a dark, suspenseful edge to it. This isn't horror.
Right.
And I'm wondering if people are just slapping horror on indie films with any hint of suspense or brutality just to get the marketing, because they know there's a market out there. People will buy up a horror film with low expectations and just to get it. You know, it's like, hey, it's a horror movie. I haven't seen this one. Let's go check it out. They'll do that more for a horror than they would for, you know, science fiction. or a romantic comedy or a drama. So I don't know. It's kind of curious to me. But in any event, I think we'll save the rest for our official best of.
Yes, official best of the year. I think we've pretty well gone through quite a bit of what we've seen when it comes to horror films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as per usual, not, you know, a huge crop of standouts, but there were a few pleasant surprises. As I say, for myself, Don't Breathe, Ouija, Origin of Evil, and Train to Busan, I thought were all, you know, reasonable entries.
Cool. And I would definitely recommend people who are not genre-bound, who are not genre sticklers, to check out Outlaws and Angels. Pandemic right now is on Netflix, so you should check that out. Like I said, I had problems with the twist at the end. of how it played out and why she did what she did. Other people might not. Other people might find that touching and sweet and self-sacrificing. Me, not so much. What was the other one I saw? The Similars, that was it. And so, yeah, those are the ones I'm recommending for now. And I'll have my full list at the, you know, with everybody else's at the end of the year. If you are listening and you want to submit your own list, there will be a form available on the sliceofsci-fi.com website for you to submit your own list for whatever genre you like, whatever films you like. We're taking best of lists for movies, television shows, books, games. What else did we have in there? Comics. Comics. That's what we had in there. So okay. those five categories right now. Submit your favorites, and we'll just have a party swapping list at the end of the year. Actually, it's not online yet, but I can say that for those who like their horror audio style, the Death Scribe 2016 competition in Chicago went off beautifully on December 5th. The winner was the short called The Quake, which was written by Travis Williams and directed by Sarah Sevigny, who is now, I believe she has set a record now as being the winning director 3 years in a row. So she has claimed three consecutive Bloody Axes. yeah, that's the director prize. The Bloody Axe is the director prize for Death Scribe. And it's a competition of 10-minute radio horror plays that are performed live on stage with live Foley and all. So, yeah.
Wow. All right.
So anyone, keep an eye out on their website, wildclawtheater.com/deathscribe. They probably won't post the audio for those plays until, I'm going to say January, February at the earliest, because this is a working theater group, and they put on other full-length horror plays during the year. So give them time. Give them time. But congratulations, Sarah. 3-time winner, you rule. anything else to add before we call this show done?
No, I think I've said what I have to say on horror for 2016.
Cool. Well, I guess that will do it for this episode. We've got the holiday season coming up. There will be a couple of more episodes. Maybe a short special or two, depends on the content we get for the remainder of the year, including those best of lists I was telling you about. The form will probably be online sometime next week, so you'll be able to come to the website and submit your own entries for the best of 2016 lists for movies, television, books, comics, video games too. Darren voted for video games. We're including video games. So keep an eye out for that. And if there's a media entertainment segment that we missed, let me know. Maybe we could add it or just have you send in a special submission for that. But that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, as usual, the number is 602-635-6976. Feel free to call in, leave a voicemail message, ask a question, or if you have a longer missive to share with us all, go ahead and record that yourself and email it or a link to it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn, and of course, over on Krypton Radio. If you listen on either iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let folks know that you're enjoying the show, and maybe they should check it out too. You can check us out on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi. Check us out on Google+ and on YouTube. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, we have the websites. SliceofSciFi.com, WritersAfterDark.com, PopCultureGeeks.com, and KickAssMysticNinjas.com. I want to thank everybody for your donations. If you want to contribute and, as I said earlier, get access to those special audios that only our supporters and patrons can access, you can head on over to patreon.com/sliceofscifi. That's patreon.com. And as always, I'd like to extend a grateful thanks to the geek rock band Sci-Fried for providing the music here. If you want to check out more songs by them, head on over to sci-fried.com. They have albums, they have singles, they have free parody singles you can download, so check those out. And you know, it is Christmas time, that giving season, so maybe buy one of their albums for that favorite geek in your life who also happens to be a fan of rock music. But that'll do it for now. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.